Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm your host, S.W. Counser, and today we're talking about an online venue for political cartoonists who, over the past several years, have been crowded out of their native habitat, the daily newspaper. I'm joined here in the virtual studio that is video conferencing by three celebrated artists, including the executive director and co-founder of Counterpoint. Nick Anderson is a Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist, until recently a staff member at the Houston Chronicle. He's now syndicated through the Washington Post. Nick, great to have you on the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Also joining us are Kevin Kelleher, also known as Cal. Cal has been the resident cartoonist at the Baltimore Sun and the Economist of London since 1978. He's the recipient of multiple awards, including the Herblock Prize and the Thomas Nast Award. And Scott Stantis is the cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and elsewhere. His work appears in USA Today once a week. He served as president of the American Association of Editorial Cartoonists from 2003 to 2004. Gentlemen, welcome to Words and Pictures.
Thanks for having us.
Awesome to be here.
Well, Nick, tell us about Counterpoint. This is a fairly new venture. It's been up and running for a couple of years. You got some funding from a venture capitalist, and you have a couple of 100,000 people on your mailing list.
Correct. And Scott and Cal are both cartoonists for Counterpoint. So Counterpoint is a very unusual publication in that the newspaper business is obviously not working out very well for editorial cartooning anymore. There's only a handful of full-time staff editorial cartoonists at newspapers anymore. So we got lucky and found a venture capitalist who was willing to back us and thought this was a bit of a problem and also a bit of an opportunity. So we have sort of upended the business model for editorial cartooning. And instead of it appearing in a newspaper, we have a newsletter in which both a liberal and conservative cartoonist appear in each morning's email newsletter. And that's 4 days a week. And then along with their cartoon, each cartoonist will post a little blurb about what their thought process is behind the cartoon, usually like their political thinking behind the cartoon. And then on Mondays, we have four cartoons, two from each side. And then we have a funny satirical writer who writes an introduction. And so basically, we are trying to just bundle editorial cartooning differently. And we pay cartoonists for original content. We don't use recycled syndicated cartoons. So it's an effort to help editorial cartoonists survive in this sort of new economy. And it's an effort to kind of create a new business model for editorial cartooning, because the old one's not working out so well.
Now, one of the folks that you have as a semi-regular on Counterpoint, Ted Rall, he's mm-hmm. been a guest on the show many times on Words and Pictures. And, you know, I'm looking at a commentary right now that Ted wrote back in 2019. He begins with a little bit of history. He says, a century ago, newspapers employed more than 2,000 full-time editorial cartoonists. Today, there are fewer than 25. In the United States, political cartooning, as we know, is dead. If you draw editorial cartoons for a living and you have any brains, you're working in a different field or looking for an exit. Now, obviously, Ted is still in the business. So, you know, I don't know how he justifies that. But what's your take on that analysis there?
Well, I think that's about right. I have a day job outside of editorial cartooning, unfortunately. I work in communications. I work actually in politics and in government. So I'm kind of have a double life. I work for the mayor of Houston as a communications professional in the government relations department. So I kind of have to lie low in my job in that I'm, you know, dealing with government officials, but I don't do it in my own capacity. I'm often writing correspondence for the mayor or writing congressional testimony or some kind of public comment or an op-ed, but it's all under the mayor's name. And then I kind of hope nobody notices, because often I'm criticizing politicians. Now, I do have to kind of lay off Texas politicians because we deal with them so much. And the only time I get into Texas politics is when it's sort of on a larger issue in which I'm not going after an individual politician. But the rest of the country is fair game.
Yeah. Also, Texas thinks it's a different country anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, some of us who wish it was. So, you know.
Well, you know, it's interesting that it seems like it's a new situation that editorial cartoonists are getting axed for their political views. Like Michael D'Adder was dumped by his newspaper group in New Brunswick after being told that Donald Trump was a taboo subject. Rob Rogers was fired by the Pittsburgh Gazette when the Trumpster publisher there, John Robinson Block, took a more active interest in the editorial page. So it used to be the case that you would have these very opinionated publishers, but they wouldn't interfere with what was out on the page there. And maybe that's still the case at The Economist. Cal, you can tell us, what's it like to work for The Economist of London? It's not a bleeding heart liberal paper, is it?
Well, no, but I, you know, when you were talking about that, I was thinking about what it's like in other countries, and what we're seeing here, actually, the tribalization that's happening in American politics is playing out in so many ways. And now we're seeing, of course, play out in newspapers, because as the newspapers contract, and there's fewer opportunities, and people get stingier and more sensitive about what's being said there. And other newspapers around the world, you have situations where cartoonists have to be very careful what they say, and that they can lose their jobs very instantly because of a cartoon or an opinion. But I remember distinctly, for example, David Lowe, who is the one of the premier cartoonists in the history of Britain. During his time, he was a very liberal cartoonist on a very conservative newspaper, and the publisher was mature enough to understand the value that brought by just initiating conversation and creating a kind of a lightning bolt on the editorial page.
And I suspect it's been happening more than people realize, but maybe not publicly, over the last 20 or so years, as the newspaper economics have been changing. And editors started saying, maybe this cartoonist isn't worth all the trouble we get.
I mean, which is absolutely bonkers if you think about it. I mean, and this is, you said we can be forthright and honest here. I'm going to just come out and say this, that editors are idiots. They always have been. And I've noticed some interviews with editors and publishers over the last 2-5 years. Not one of them, guys, think about this. Not one of them took responsibility for what's happened to the newspaper business. It's always some other reason for doing it, other than the fact that you're putting out a garbage product. You get rid of things like, oh, I don't know, the cartoonists that people actually read, and you expect to keep other features that nobody reads, and they don't take any responsibility for it. So you literally have a business, a billion-dollar business, that has been destroyed by people who had no idea what they were doing. They had for 20 or 30 years, you literally flipped a switch and published money. You know, is that easy? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden they were faced with the internet and other challenges. And how many of us, I know the guys sitting in on this conversation, went to our editors at one point early on and said, listen, there's software that you can take your want ads and put them online. And I can't believe the publisher I was working with at the time looked at me and said, why would I want someone not to look at my newspaper? I'm going, ow, brain hurt. What is wrong with you? And of course, Craigslist step forward and destroyed that entire source of income for newspapers, which was pretty significant. I have no respect for virtually most of the people who have run the newspaper business into the ground and didn't have to. And part of the casualties of that, sadly, is editorial cartoonists.
And, you know, one of the great things about Counterpoint is that it's proven that there's still a huge appetite for cartoons. So that when Nick and the team are able to assemble them and get them out and present them in front of the public, people wanted to see them. They really liked them. And people respond very positively. And cartoons are always on newspapers had a kind of a love-hate relationship, as Nick was pointing out, particularly in recent years, because you know, cartoons, there's nothing, you know, editors will tell you, there's nothing that can raise more ire amongst the readership than a cartoon can. And the New York Times proved it recently when they decided that it wasn't worth having any cartoons published in there anymore, because it was just basically too much work for them to have to deal with them.
Well, on top of that, the story is the cartoon ran very controversial, and they fired the two cartoonists who were working for them who had nothing to do with the cartoon.
Mm. This was a cartoon about Israel, if I recall.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, wow.
In fact, Patrick Chapat, who was one of the cartoonists, who's a Swiss cartoonist, says famously, it was the first time he was ever fired for a job for a cartoon that somebody else drew.
It's insane. It's just insane. And look at the era we live in. I mean, Americans particularly are reading less and less now than ever before. 11, I think it's like 11 or 14 minutes a day. It's a crazy low number. And that includes tweets, you know, texts, the whole thing. So I'm trying to think of a thing that actually provides a point of view in a very quick graphic way.
That you has a picture too, maybe?
It has a picture and that you can actually look at on, some kind of device you held in your hand and you could view it easily. Boy, if only something like that existed.
I don't know.
It has for like 2,000 damn years.
Well, outside the U.S., the situation really doesn't seem to be so dire. I mean, editorial cartoons are still very popular overseas, especially in Europe, but also in Asia, Africa, even the Middle East. You know, the work of British editorial cartoonists like Steve Bell and Martin Rosen, I mean, their stuff is just scathing. The way that Bell draws Prime Minister Boris Johnson, his face is just a big pair of buttocks with an unruly thatch of blonde hair on top.
Yeah, well, they have a much more wicked sense of satire there. Satire has been percolating in Britain for a little bit longer, and they have a higher tolerance for it. But unfortunately, in the print world, many of the Western countries are suffering the same way on their newspapers as we are. And so that there's more and more pressure, and cartoonists are being peeled off. And Steve Bell, who was, you know, a legend in Great Britain, his newspaper, The Guardian, has restricted his time and curtailed a lot of his contract. And so it's happening everywhere. I tell you two places where cartooning is doing well, however. One is Brazil. And we know, of course, the explosive politics that's going on there now, but they have a handful of really, really first-class, world-class cartoonists working down there now. And in India, where, you know, a country where there's a very large middle class and they're consuming newspapers still in large numbers there, and more cartoonists are finding their way to fill the papers there.
And those are two countries with famously overreaching heads of state who would like to be strong men.
Exactly right. And it's so if the cartoonists have, as a result, a pretty important position there, and the public really support them.
I don't think there's any question. Editorial cartooning, I mean, we're like toe fungus. There's no getting rid of us. I mean, truly, through history, they do the digs in Pompeii. They found what amounted to editorial cartoon graffiti on the side of buildings. Talking, you know, the very first books have editorial cartoons in them, de facto editorial cartoons in them. So we're going to be around. It's just like they said, how do you monetize it? How do you get it? How do you disseminate the work? And that's the challenge going forward. I think Counterpoint is certainly one of the really important first steps.
You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Counser. And we're talking about Counterpoint, the online venue for political cartoons. Joining me today are cartoonists Scott Stantis, Kevin Kelleher, and Counterpoint co-founder Nick Anderson. You know, it's interesting. You have every day you have one cartoonist from the left, one from the right, and occasionally it's like pro wrestling. You know, you've got this kind of overamped grudge match between the two of them. And other times it's just weirdly on the same page, like you've got both of them agreeing that COVID is a menace or that Trump should get off the stage.
Yeah, we have, I'm one of the cartoonists from the right, and I was a never Trump, this remain a never Trump Republican. And it was hard to draw during those 4 years because you heard editors say, and some of our cartoonists on Counterpoint say, you know, you're not a real conservative, you're not a real Republican. We need to hear more pro-Trump stuff. And I'm going, I can't do it. The guy's horrible. I can't. My conscience won't let me do it. And if you insist I do it, then I can't. And obviously, on the other side, Rob Rogers lost his job because of that.
And that brings up something I'm passionate about. CNN's crossfire fell into this terrible rut where they were, each side had to be represented, and it just became rote. And I never wanted Counterpoint to be something where each day had to have a liberal and conservative perspective on the same topic. We let people, whether from the left or the right, say what they think. Scott was criticizing Trump, but he was doing it from a conservative point of view. And liberals can do the same. So we've had some recent ones, like liberals last week were criticizing Cuomo. And we've had some going after Biden. And we want to encourage a real free thinking exchange of ideas with counterpoint.
And again, thank you for that, because you early on, Nick and I had this conversation. I said, Nick, I'm just, I can't be that guy. You know, I cannot support this president. And you were like, then don't.
Yeah. If we had forced people into positions, then the work would become very flat and predictable. And it just kills creativity when you have to take a point of view.
Scott, in addition to your editorial page work and your appearances on Counterpoint, you have a syndicated daily strip called Prickly City,
yes,
which is set in the arid landscape of the American Southwest. I'm going to go out on a limb and assume that you started the strip when you were the resident cartoonist at the Arizona Republic.
It was after I left there, but yeah, I was living in a small desert town. It just seemed like the desert environment, you know, everything's designed to prick you, poison you, or kill you, which is the perfect metaphor for politics. And this was back in 2004. You know, all writing is autobiographical, and the comic strip Prickly City is pretty autobiographical and kind of encapsulates my thoughts and my sadness at what's happened to my party and as a conservative, my philosophy, and how it's been usurped by some pretty evil forces.
Well, let's see, the two characters in Prickly City are a young girl named Carmen and a coyote named Winslow.
Yes.
And Winslow the coyote, he's sort of the left-leaning foil for Carmen, who's a young African-American girl who leans Republican.
No, she's not. I never say that.
Oh, really?
I never specify what nationality she is, ever.
Okay. Well, do you get that the way you draw her? I'm just going to put this out there. Have you gotten some pushback from readers about representation? Because
absolutely.
She does seem...
A girl of color.
Just looking at you on the screen here, you seem to be a person of pallor. So so very different from the Carmen character.
Yeah, I am. I thought that it was interesting to have conservative viewpoints coming out of someone who you wouldn't expect them to come from. But by turns, living in the Southwest, being a Californian myself, there's a lot of Latinos and Latinx members of that community who are very conservative. I mean, it was always I find it incredibly frustrating that the Republican Party didn't go after a community that generally family-oriented, religious, hardworking, and those are Republicans. And so I thought, well, why not turn a person like that into an actual speaking character? So have I gotten some blowback? Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Because you're right. Yeah, I'm very beige.
You self-identify as a libertarian. Am I right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, your newspaper, the Chicago Tribune, it's been around since the 1840s. Just recently, Tribune Publishing was bought lock, stock, and barrel by the hedge fund Alden Global Capital. And nearly overnight, it lost nearly half its top talent and a bunch of its feature content.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering what your reaction is to the situation. Is the news junkie side of you kind of sad, but the libertarian side of you is applauding the triumph of private equity over collectivism?
I would say my love for that newspaper overrides any libertarian inklings I might have. It broke my heart to see they lost 60 people this last round of buyouts. They also just announced 2 weeks ago that they were cutting the size of the daily newspaper by 30%. This is the Chicago bleeping Tribune. You know, I mean, this is an important publication in our national discourse, and to see it diminished by these guys, you know, are they driven purely by Randian kind of impulses? Yeah, they are. They don't give two anythings about what happens to that paper, what happens to journalism, and it's a tragedy. It's an outright tragedy to see what's going to happen there. It breaks my heart because my love as a cartoonist coming up, a young cartoonist coming up, Jeff McNally working at the Chicago Tribune, Dick Locher, the whole top of the Tribune Tower was if you look at the original blueprints, it says cartoonist suites. That's how highly they thought of their cartoonists. And so when I was hired by them in 2009, it was one of the greatest moments of my professional life.
You got to hang out in the cartoonist suites, which are now luxury condos for other people, right?
They did. Chance the Rapper's in one of them. I'm not kidding. He's in one of those suites. Well, interestingly, when I was in the tower, because I, you know, had a key that opened things, we'd go down deep into the archives in the basement. And one time I came across this thing. I can't, obviously, this is radio. It's hard to explain. This thing was huge and looked like a massive portfolio. And it opened up and Jeff McNally had storyboarded out a proposal for a show, a TV show, an animated TV show.
Wow.
So I actually was able to give that to his son. Wow. Rather than let it just be, you know, I don't know what the hell they were done with it once they moved out of the tower.
Scott, that Jeff McNally project, was that based on his Shoe characters?
Yes. I'm sorry. Yes. It was a Shoe. It was a show based on Shoe. It was not very good. I'm sorry to say, but it wasn't, I mean, there's a reason it didn't sell, but it was just really awesome to see Jeff McNally do these massive storyboards in his style. It was pretty awesome.
Weren't you tempted to swipe those and keep them for
yourself? I did.
But you gave them to the son eventually.
Yeah, I was a good guy. I mean, yeah. You know. But I had lunch for a few months.
Pretty good guy for toe fungus.
Yeah. Ayn Rand would not approve.
Not at all.
Should have kept him and sold him.
Touché.
Well, what's next for everybody? Any new projects on the horizon?
I've got my hands full.
I'm working on a series of children's books that I hope will bear some fruit, and they have a slightly political theme. It's about, you know, 13-year-old twins who become eco warriors, and they're helping to try to save the planet.
That sounds amazing. I can't believe you have time for that, Cal.
Well, and so, Cal's being a little humble here too.
What's that, Scott?
Go ahead, Nick. I was just going to say, Cal's being a little humble here too, because he's done some other stuff.
Like his artwork is amazing. He puts us all to shame often. They're very ornate. And then he often does these GIF animations to boot. And I'm like, how do you have the time? And now you're doing children's books?
Well, you know, sleep is optional, but but you know, the part of this is that, you know, I've been doing this a long time, and I'm finally thinking that I'm finally figuring out how to do it now. I'm just getting it now. And so I'm trying to enjoy this as much as possible. I feel like I'm rewarded when I have the opportunity to do this all the time. But I think that one of the things I tell you that I learned early on in this business was that all of us are very dispensable, right? We're seeing this now with our cartoons and what happens, very dispensable. So as a result, I try to do the best I can every single day and produce my A game when I can. And as long as I'm capable, I think I'll try to do that.
It shows.
We're all super creative and so what Cal described, I'm working on some graphic novels. I'm working on children's books myself. Mine is about how these little kids, they're capitalist warriors, how they want to build industry and not destroy it. I'm kidding. but I am working on stuff like, and just writing more, and I mean every person, every editorial cartoonist I know is like perpetually and pathologically creative, and so you're going to see us all over the place.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. At the end of the week, I tend to take weekends and work on photography, because I like Scott said, I can't stop with creative energy. I do tons of photography.
And it's awesome, by the way. It's really good.
Oh, thank you, Scott. I appreciate that. And it's kind of my second passion. And I sometimes go, why do I feel the drive to do this? But I just keep creating them and posting them to Instagram. And you know, my dream is to have my work in a gallery at some point, but I don't have time to actually get them printed out and present them. But I just find that I have this relentless need to create and get it out there.
Scott, are you going to draw Nick into Prickly City as a political consultant? And
I probably should. That's actually, I'm writing Prickly City tonight. So
what kind of animal would Nick be?
Oh, he'd be a silver fox, no doubt.
Oh, I like that. I'm liking this idea more and more. At first, I thought it was a terrible idea.
Sly and working in politics, you know, you have to don't turn your back on him.
Leading a double life.
Well, we've been talking about Counterpoint. It's the online gathering place for editorial cartoonists. And three of those cartoonists are with us today. Scott Stantis, Kevin Kelleher, and Counterpoint co-founder Nick Anderson. Scott, Kevin, Nick, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much. This is fun.
And Nick, for our listeners who might be interested in signing up for the newsletter, how can they find out more?
It's easy, counterpoint.com. And 2 days a week, we are free. And that's Tuesday and Thursday. It's a free publication. And if you find that you like it, you can sign up for daily, which so Monday, Wednesday, Friday. It's just $5 or $7 a month, I think. And so, you know, check us out. It's free. If you really want to support editorial cartooning, sign up for the subscription.
And Scott, what's the name of your podcast?
Well, which one? We have a number of them. I'm going to try to direct you towards Counterpoint Countercast, and you can also see it on YouTube. So so you can actually see the cartoonists, which is kind of interesting. You get to see what these guys look like.
And the interviews are really good. They're really fascinating. Scott's a very good interviewer. I'm not just saying that because he's doing it for Countercast, but he's the hearing the editorial cartoonists, especially even the ones I don't agree with, hearing what their thought process is really fascinating.
It really is.
And Cal, you're at caltoons.com?
Absolutely. Yeah, come and check it out.
CALTOONS.com.
That's right.
Well, you've been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. Thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. You can find an archived version of the show later today at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on Twitter @wordsandpicture.